Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is episode 18 of True Voice Media Conversations. It's our podcast, and as it is now episode 18, we're finally legal, so we can talk to older guests, I suppose. Today, I have on the line with me a gentleman by the name of Corey Padveen. Corey is the, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe you are the Global Director of Social Business Strategy for T2 Marketing. Is that the correct title? Did I get it right?
Close.
Close.
The Say. Director of Global.
Ah, but switch them.
I'll let this one slide.
Director of Global Social Media Strategy, Social Business Strategy. Well, Corey, you and I know each other from the speaker circuit together, mostly from the Social Media Strategy Summit. And I must say, I absolutely despise when you and I have sessions at the same time. One, because how can I compete going head to head against you? But two, then I can't sit in your sessions, which are always so incredibly informative. And you manage to blend some really hardcore data and really technical approaches to things while at the same time having a very personable and light style about your presentation. So I always appreciate that your presentations are a little bit of the more advanced sessions that we see at conferences, and you're not afraid to do that. So I always appreciate that. But why don't you take a moment to just kind of introduce who you are, what you do, the sort of work that you're doing over at T2 so that the people that are listening to this podcast can get a sense of the expertise that's on the other end of the line here.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. It's flattering. I wish I could say the same about you, but I don't have any nice things to say about you, so apologies on my end.
There's that Canadian charm.
We're so polite. No, but in all honesty, I mean, yours was one of the first sessions I saw when I first attended the Social Media Strategy Summit, and that's where the whole idea of personalizing my my sessions came into play, so I have you to thank for that, and thank you for what you had to say. So as far as what I'll give you a little background, and I'll give everyone a little background on T2 as an agency. I mean, a lot of people haven't necessarily heard of T2, and that's because we've spent the last 30 years working in the background. We've been a marketing and advertising consultancy for close to 30 years now. We've worked with some of the largest brands in the world. We've worked with Coke, McDonald's, Gillette, PepsiCo, Disney. I mean, we've worked with virtually every brand across every vertical on developing strategic approaches to market research, producing market research. We've done a ton of work with very large agencies. We've partnered with a lot of our large agencies on some of their campaigns to provide the secondary and tertiary elements of a campaign that may not be as superficial as, say, a commercial or, in the good old days, a billboard. And that's really been our focus. It's on the strategy. It's on the step-by-step implementation as opposed to necessarily the large-scale, out-there final product. So it's been a lot of fun. It's definitely a different approach. As for me, we've worked in traditional media for close to 30 years. We actually were working on building some of the first websites about 18, 19 years ago. And we've really invested heavily on the social division of our business, the social business side, in the last 8 years. And I've been working with T2 now for over 3 years now. And my role as the Director of Global Social Business Strategy is really on tying together data with execution. Execution, again, not necessarily the superficial execution you see, but more tying in the data aspects of what you can research, what you can find, really analyzing everything that exists within the social sphere on digital platforms in web-based analytics, whether you're using things like Google Analytics or Omniture, any one of those sources, really finding the data that matters and building strategies and developing research out of that data. My background is in economics. I love numbers. I am borderline attracted to them, and that's something that I have to deal with. That's my own problem. But, I mean, numbers and I just get along really well, and that's really been my approach to building these strategies, is in figuring out where the numbers are, analyzing the numbers to identify where opportunities exist, and then exploiting those opportunities in real time and on an ongoing basis. And that's really where these strategies come into play.
So I'm quite the opposite. Numbers make me feel very uncomfortable, and I'm not the least bit attracted to them. But I am attracted to the story of numbers and kind of the final output of it. So when, you know, people like you are done looking at the numbers and they explain to me what they see in them and they tell me that, I like to take that and then I get very involved in how those numbers, those stories of the numbers relate to the people. And I appreciate that you're kind of across that entire gamut because you're the end to end where you are looking at the numbers, making sense of the numbers, looking at the story, connecting it to the people, and then building the strategy. So, you're how many years younger than me? I'm 34. You are
9 years your junior.
Good Lord. See, I love talking with people that are younger than me and you're just trying to race past me, and it makes me have to run that much faster to be able to keep up with the likes of you. So slow the hell down. But I've always really appreciated that, you know, in your speaking engagements, you really do talk a lot about data, and you make the concepts that are otherwise really terrifying to me very approachable. And I think that's something that's very effective for you. So I think one of the things I'd like to start out with and talk a little bit about on this podcast, where I see a lot of the value coming from, is having you talk a little bit about how small and medium-sized businesses can use data to make better decisions and explaining it in a way that's really practical for people to take a next step. And even if it's just make one better marketing decision moving forward, I think that would be a really great outcome. So, can you talk about some of the concepts that can be applied to small and medium-sized businesses to make a better marketing decision over the course of, say, the next 6 months?
Sure. And, you know, I'll preface this by saying that you talk about your distaste for numbers, and you're certainly not alone. I mean, how many people are lining up around the block to be accountants or statisticians? Not too many. But the beauty and the reason why I've really embraced social and social data is because it does make it a lot easier. I mean, data visualization is a huge thing on the rise in the industry. And the reason for that is because people like to actually see numbers in action. Having a raw data sheet handed to you it's nauseating for most people.
Yeah, it makes my head spin. I get cold sweats and I just want to call out sick.
And that's the majority of response. I mean, that's what most people do. I know that I can name dozens of people who you hand them an Excel sheet with a few thousand columns and a few hundred rows, and they're probably going to laugh it off and say thank you very much and throw it in the garbage. But the beauty of data that we can look at now is that it's presented to you it's visualized. It's something that is, aesthetically, it's nice to look at when you think about it. You click on the insights on your Facebook page, and that's millions of pieces of data just being presented to you in visual form. Those data are readily accessible, and the great thing is that these kinds of data, this market research, things that used to take expensive focus groups, expensive census or polls, or running things on a small selection of or a sample size of your audience. Hopefully, it's a randomly selected size that has a relatively even distribution of criteria. And maybe you'll get enough information and insights to build a strategy that relates to the audience at large. But realistically, you're only taking a small sample size of the population. When you take your data that exists within the back end of, say, a social network, or now with Universal Analytics on Google, you can start looking at affinity categories, for example, of all of your website visitors. These are all people who have already shown you an expressed interest in your content, have given you a thumbs up or a green light on sharing your content with them, sharing your brand's message with them. And these are people whom you can start to analyze, for lack of a better term, to identify where opportunities exist. So to take that data and start to identify those opportunities, say in the next 6 months, I say the key thing to start looking at is correlations or commonalities among your audience. So let's just take a Facebook audience, for example. Now, a lot of this is, some of it is manual, some of it is tedious, but basically running through your Facebook audience, looking through an analysis of, yes, we have our basic demographics like age, we have gender, we have location, those are all well and good, but people are giving you a whole bunch more insight that you could have otherwise never had either access to or otherwise never even known about, known to ask for. So, for example, people are telling you outright what it is they like. They're telling you how often they're logging into Facebook. They're telling you exactly what categories they're interested in, what information they want to hear about. And looking at things like that, you can start to put together strategies or campaigns that actually create content for those interests. So, for example, we have there's a proprietary concept that we've been theorizing over the last couple of years called responsive branding. And the idea of responsive branding builds off of exactly that. It's the idea of running a comprehensive analysis on your existing audience, identifying points of or outlier points of engagement. Now, that engagement can either be likes, it can be shares, it can be click-throughs to your website or some sort of action taken either on or off the social network. And identifying within those outliers commonalities with the audiences that have taken those actions. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I see 10 different touch points over my last 100 posts that generated a much higher level of engagement, I'm going to look at two things. First, I'll look at exactly what type of content I was sharing, what the message was, if there were any correlations between, say, message length or message structure. Maybe all of them ended with a question. Maybe there was a particular type of photo. Maybe it's something as simple as a color correlation between every one of them. Maybe blue was prominent in every one of those posts. Look through that, and then look through the audience that engaged. There you see things like the audience most likely to engage with this post fits into the following demographics. Look at age, look at interests, look at gender. Look at all of those key points to build a social client persona, as we call it. And then based on that social client persona, create that responsive branding strategy.
Now, let me ask you real quick. Is that a manual process? Are you literally looking at each individual post in the analytics and saying, okay, this post was extremely popular, so is this one, and then looking at each person that liked it, going through and looking at their likes and trying to figure out if they're, you know, let's say you see out of 5 posts, you get 100 likes on each post. Are you going through 500 different people potentially and looking for, you know, let's say they all happen to like Breaking Bad, so maybe we should run a Breaking Bad contest? Or is that what you're saying, or is there some sort of software you're using to do that, you know, to automate that? What's the process look like?
When it comes to, and this is where, you know, people who don't care for numbers are really going to have a tough time getting on board. But the idea behind here is that a big part of it is that manual process. I mean, when I'm looking at these kinds of data, I'm running regressions on Excel. I'm plotting those regressions. I mean, I enjoy using, you know, any sort of data visualization software that allows for plotting. I mean, Tableau is a great example of data visualization. Data analysis, essentially taking that data, running those regressions, figuring out where the outliers are, and then running an analysis to identify correlations within those outliers. So that's where the really data-centric and the hard data analysis comes into play, is in that part of the process. Once you've identified those opportunities, though, it's no longer a question of simply A-B testing, so to speak, there is still A-B testing, but it's much more targeted A-B testing, because you have this audience built, you have these types of data available to you, and you have these types of content that you know based on an historical analysis that these types of content will work, that they will generate that level of engagement, because you're able to look at a statistically significant sample size and say, this works for us.
So to use the example that you were just giving, so does that mean the sort of thing where, let's say you go through and you find these posts and you notice there's a color correlation, you know that you do a blue image, a blue-based image, and it ends with a question, that you begin increasing the frequency of which you do blue-based image posts, you look to see whether or not the hypothesis that that'll generate higher engagement is true. If it does, then you can use that to expand into things like social advertising and pull in more of those same type of visitors. Is that the sort of thing that you would put into a strategy, or am I off base?
No, that's dead on. I mean, that's exactly what this kind of an approach encompasses, is you build out these audiences. Generally, I mean, my rule of thumb is that whenever we're putting something together like this, we build 6 audience types So we'll look through those correlations, and based on the audience criteria that we've identified, we'll build six types of target audiences. That is a mix or combination of different things. Something where everything is included, where maybe only two or three components are included, and we'll see which audience type resonates most with certain types of content held constant across each one.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a question of testing, but it's much more, it's less of a, you know, just throw it against the wall and see what sticks. It's more of a, here's what we know might work based on what we've seen. So let's run that test with this target audience. Essentially, the idea and the beauty of running things like social ads and social ad campaigns is that within minutes, you're able to see what's working and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a question of running a magazine ad, for example, and getting no calls and thinking, well, that was a nice spend of a couple of $100,000 on the creative, on the ad space, on et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's hope it works next time. This time you could spend a handful of dollars and actually be able to say, this works, this doesn't. Let's reallocate budgets to different parts of the program.
So let me ask you this also. When you're starting this process, I mean, obviously the client's goals are going to be first and foremost, but how often are you starting with what exists and maybe digging into their CRM and finding the customers that have come from social and kind of running it backwards from there and identifying trends in those people first? Let's say you have, you know, 100 fans, but three people have purchased from you. How much more concerned are you with the three people that purchased versus the 97 people that didn't?
Well, let me give you, I'll tell you a story.
Yay, story time. Can you please start it with Once Upon a Time? I think I'm going to make that a thing.
Sure. Once upon a time, we had a client come to us after having spent a certain very large amount of ad dollars on building their audience size. Their goal prior to working with us was, or the idea behind the ad campaign they were running was, we want to build our audience. Fine, you know, there are, you show me the person that isn't interested in increasing their follower base, I'll give you $1,000.
Yeah.
Everybody wants more followers, everybody wants more fans. The idea of anybody who comes to you and says, I want nobody listening to me, I don't want anyone to hear what I have to say, that just doesn't exist. So it's common for most people to say, we want to increase our, say, Facebook fans, our Twitter followers, whatever it is, and they run basic promote page campaigns on, say, Facebook or promote account campaigns on Twitter just to build that base. So we ran an analysis on their existing fans, and they had roughly, they had just shy of about 10,000 fans. We ran analysis, and they had just started the program about 6 months earlier. So we ran analysis on the fans that they had, and we found, after running an analysis of the existing fans and some pieces of test content, that less than 0.02% of those fans were actually interested in the content being shared. So to answer your question, am I interested in the three that purchased or the 97 that didn't? The 97 that didn't, it's as important as the three, because this is 97% of my audience that may just not be interested in my message. I mean, how many times have you seen a page or people that you know just see a page pop up in their feed? Maybe it's an article they find interesting or has an interesting title, they like the page, and they never return to that page again. It's a common practice. It's something that people often do. And one big problem that a lot of people tend to overlook is the fact that when you're running a blanket promote page contest, it's going out to people that are of all ages in all sorts of places. If you identify people just in the United States, it's going to go to people who are 13 to 18. I don't know how many businesses are interested in the 13 to 18 market in terms of advertising. It makes it a little difficult considering certain regulations, but 13-year-olds are going to like anything that shows up in front of them. 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, these are people who are just going to like pages because they pop up. These are, as great as it is to have a huge audience, it's not necessarily going to be relevant. So I'm going to be more interested in some of the key demographics of those three people and looking at what the path was that they took, not necessarily what they're made up of, because if I have three people that I can look at in terms of who my target audience might be, that's not really a sample size that's of any value to me. 3% of 100,000 is a little different, but 3 people of 100 isn't necessarily going to produce too much relevant insight. What will be valuable, however, is looking at the path. If I see commonalities that all of them had to go through 5 touch points before they finally made that purchase, that gives me some insight into where I can make improvements. So if I see that someone starts on Facebook, goes to my about page, clicks on my my product catalog page, clicks on a product, clicks on and has to go through 5, 6, 7 steps before they actually make that purchase, well, I know that those 97 people who didn't buy, it might be because it was too much of a burden to actually go through that process. So that's another thing to look at is what are the actual steps involved? And when we were in Amsterdam, my session talked about the behavior flow chart and the user flow chart in Google Analytics. That shows you how many touch points or how many pages people have to visit before they actually take action. And how often are people dropping off at each one of those pages, leaving you by the 6th or 7th step where people can actually make that purchase? How many people are going to be left?
Yeah. So I have so many questions that just came out of everything you just said. Here are a couple that I want to ask you. One, what represents a sample size that is statistically relevant in your opinion in the work that you've done? You know, you mentioned they had 10,000 fans on Facebook. Like, how many of those are you culling through? And are you randomly sampling them? Are you looking at, say, like the 300 most recent? Or, you know, are you looking at ones that look at a specific post? So that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And the second is you had mentioned sort of the path that people take and the behaviors. Is it 5 touch points? Is it looking at a particular page? I'm wondering how you go about tying together social activity and website behavior activity and linking the behaviors of those two things so that you can make better decisions moving forward on both sides of it, that your social data is informing your website activity and that your website data is informing what you do socially, and even seeing if there's a mix between those two.
Sure.
Start with sample size.
Okay. So in terms of figuring out a sample size, in econometrics, economic statistics, it all depends on what it is you're looking for in terms of an error. What error size do you want? If you want a 90%, 95% accurate sample size, you can actually calculate the necessary sample size. So if I have a population of 10,000 and I want to determine exactly what size of a population I need to take in order to test something with a 95% margin, 95% accuracy, I'll have to calculate a sample size. That can be done. I mean, you can jump onto Google and type in sample size calculator. You'll find all sorts of results that will simply do it for you. I'm not going to go through the step-by-step process of how to use Excel to calculate a sample size. Because
no, that's totally fine, and I don't think it would come through on a podcast quite right. But I am going to, when we're done with this podcast, I'm definitely going to be asking you for a handful of resources of things that you're using or different, you know, things that we've mentioned on this episode, because I'm sure it's going to be extremely valuable for anybody that visits this the show notes.
Yeah, sure, definitely. Type into Google, and I firmly believe that the entire educational system needs to just abandon the painstaking efforts of doing things only by hand, because at least in most places, you're going to be able to have access to the internet. I mean, 96% of the world is on mobile device. 93% of the world, has access to mobile. It won't be long, you know, now with Facebook launching web access to all sorts of places in the world, it won't be long before people have access to Google to just type in sample size calculator. Jump onto Google, type in sample size calculator, determine your accuracy level. If you want a 90% accuracy, 95%, if you're looking for obviously 100%, you're going to take full sample size. But a sample size calculator will tell you exactly how many people you'll need to take from that population to be 85, 90% accurate in your analysis. Mm-hmm. So I might need to take, of a 10,000, I might need to take a few hundred, a few thousand. It all depends on what it is I'm looking to achieve in terms of accuracy. So that's first, as far as the sample size. Now your next question.
Next question was behaviors and tying together social and website and seeing how the two interrelate, really mainly focusing on behavior. How can you better understand who your audience is, what they need, what their hopes, wants, desires, dreams, fears, everything are, using data that you can source from either social or website sources?
Sure. So the one thing that is really important to keep in mind is that everybody has 10 different personalities when it comes to social. Mm-hmm. I mean, my personality on Facebook, I have two personalities on Facebook. When I share stuff that is business oriented from my own blog, from our corporate blog, my approach is going to be much more professional. But if I'm having a conversation with a group of friends that is on an image I shared between us, well, that's going to be far more personal. So when it comes to social, the thing to keep in mind is that personalities differ, not just on networks themselves or with the audiences that people are talking to, but personalities differ from network to network. I mean, how many people do you know have the same rhetoric on LinkedIn as they do on Tumblr, for example, or the same rhetoric on, I'll go back with LinkedIn, as they do on Twitter? People are going to take each network for what it's designed to do and mold their personality and mold their preferences, mold what they talk about and what they share to what's expected of them on that network. So the whole idea of behavioral economics sort of comes into play here, because we have to start looking at what people are trying to do on these networks. I'm not necessarily going to post an article about the 50 greatest restaurants to find guacamole in Los Angeles on LinkedIn, but I'll post that on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing to do is to take a step back and recognize how people's personalities are going to differ from network to network. Once you've done that, it's time to start looking at the audiences that currently exist on your own channel. So for example, take a look at your audience on LinkedIn, take a look at your own audience on Facebook, your audience on Twitter. Generally, this is an ideal situation if you have a relatively large sample audience or a large audience or an audience that does tend to have some levels of engagement. If they have no engagement, that gives you some insight into what you may or may not be doing right. It may be time to start looking at how you can build audiences in new demographics, because obviously the ones that you have aren't working for you. When it comes to your website, start looking at your audience behavior. Look at not only what pages are they visiting, because you might find that the majority of people who come to your page or who come to your blog only focus on one selection of articles, and that selection of articles might be related to maybe data. Maybe those articles are related to a specific product. Maybe those articles are related to something that you started right in for fun, and it turns out it's what's driving the most people to your website. Each one of these has to be evaluated differently because, and again, when you're looking at your website analytics, you have to look at the behavior of your audience coming from each one of these sources. For example, if people are coming to your website from direct channels, or if they're coming from search, they might have a very different personality than those coming from Facebook. And they may act very differently on your website. You also want to look at conversion rates. If people coming from Twitter only visit 2.5 pages per visit, but tend to convert at a 12% conversion rate, and people coming from Facebook visit 6 pages and convert at 2%, well, either you're targeting the wrong audience on Facebook, or Facebook just doesn't have the necessary buyers that you're looking to acquire. So it's really going to be a question of evaluating each network's audience separately, and then bringing them all together once they arrive on your own property to determine where those opportunities exist and how you can cater to different behaviors based on things like pages visited, time spent on different pages, what the rate of sharing is if you're looking at some of your Data Hub activity or your trackbacks in Google Analytics. These are things you can look at to determine what kind of behaviors are generating interest and expansion of your audience, and where those opportunities exist outside of your website to cater to those behaviors.
So let me ask you this. You mentioned that by the way, great answer. What's awesome about this is that every time you say something, it's spurring in me like a new question I want to ask you, because I really want to follow these paths down. If we could kind of map out the analytics of this conversation, that'd be interesting. But you had mentioned a couple things, that people behave a certain way on certain networks, and that they kind of relate to the network by the format of it and the expectations. And I've always talked about this. If you're familiar, I know you have a girlfriend, but if you're familiar with dating sites at all, Tinder is a different format than Match. There's a different format than OkCupid. And as a result, the people that it attracts, it's different, in the same way that Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr are going to attract different audiences based upon the behaviors that exist and the type of content that's shared and the cadence and frequency and things like that. So I think the question I want to ask you about a little bit is, are you familiar with the Forrester social technographic profiles, the 7 different types of behaviors they've identified online?
No.
You should check it out. I feel like you'd really, really like it. It's very interesting. There are 7 different categories of behavior that people exhibit online, and based upon the demographic that you're targeting, they on average will exhibit different behaviors. Like, for instance, you can generally say that people over 65 are going to be more likely to be inactives than they are to be creators, which are the people who are, you know, writing blog posts, who are creating videos, who are creating podcasts. There's critics. They're the people that respond to content. There's conversationalists, people that typically involve in conversation in one way or another. There's collectors. Those are your Pinterest and Delicious and social bookmarking people. They like to take things and organize it. Joiners is the frequency by which people will join a new network because other people are there, that they'll check it out and see what it is. Spectators, almost always one of the largest audiences, are just people that just sit there and watch. And actually, that's the one I want to go with you on. And then the final one is inactives. But if you're looking at your Facebook analytics and you're seeing that there's not a lot of engagement, I mean, obviously one piece of it is the decrease in organic reach, but the other is you might just have an audience of spectators. And you had mentioned, you know, maybe you just don't have the right content, or maybe you don't have the right audience. It could be that you have an audience that exhibits behaviors that aren't a match for what your marketing activities are. So maybe that means you go to a new network. I think my question for you is this, you know, taking all of that and bundling it together, here's the question. Do you think that there are networks that, because of the format, because of the cadence, because of the way people share and who uses it, that are just simply not opportunities to generate leads or to close sales? Are there places where people just shouldn't be wasting their time? Or do you feel that there's a possibility anywhere if you understand your audience and you create the right content?
I think, and, you know, that's going to be a controversial answer, whatever you answer, just because of the nature of social, the nature of experience on the individual brand basis. I mean, you and I have talked about this many times, that looking at aggregate data, looking at aggregate results is a waste of time. Because to say, I mean, we've talked about this in reference to people who talk about how you have to share photos on Facebook because photos get X percent more engagement. Well, that's absurd, because I can show you plenty of pages that share nothing but text and get tons of engagement. A perfect example is the Allstate Insurance mayhem page. Mm-hmm. Not a single photo has been shared to that page, and they generate hundreds of likes, hundreds of comments, if not thousands, on every one of their posts. And that's because that's what works for that brand. In answer to your question, it's going to be an evaluation of, again, taking a step back, starting with identifying who it is you're trying to target, who it is you think your client is, who it is you think is going to click through, building a strategy that is targeting that audience on every one of the networks where they may exist, which also requires an understanding of network demographics. But it's going to be a question of, you know, the pay-to-play system is what's going to determine success at this point for a lot of brands. Do I think that there are some networks that just aren't going to work? Yeah, of course, there are some brands that just, they won't have a place on Pinterest. They won't have a place on YouTube if they don't have videos. I mean, obviously, YouTube being a Google-owned property, you want to have videos because it's a search engine. But there are just some brands that won't have a place on certain networks because they don't have content that applies.
So it's less about the platform than it is about the brand that's using the platform. The example I always give is nobody wants to like their dry cleaner on Facebook. Nobody really cares that much about what their dry cleaner has to say, unless their dry cleaner happens to come up with an unbelievably clever and creative Facebook content strategy. Otherwise, that's just not the right place for them. They're probably going to benefit more from something like Yelp, where they can respond in kind to customer complaints and compliments.
Exactly. I mean, that's a prime example, just because, you know, people tend to think of social media, people get bogged down in social media as a concept rather than a set of terms. Mm-hmm. I mean, people think, when they think social media, realistically, social media is any medium in which conversation is possible. So your website, for example, is a form of social media. Mm-hmm. Any social bookmarking site is social media. These are media where people can communicate. And just like you said, Yelp is social media. It's a form of social media. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, YouTube, these are not the only social networks that exist. Essentially, the internet is a social network, and it's just a question of finding the different avenues through which you can communicate with other people. The idea for the brand is to determine where they're going to find the most success, testing different methods to reach people. Now, that might be, maybe your only value in Facebook is running a promotion. I know that we've worked with a number of government agencies that are only looking to, they're looking to promote one thing leading up to either a vote or some sort of an initiative they have running. And really, the value of Facebook rests purely in running these campaigns until they're done and then disappearing from the network, because it's not always going to, you don't need to have that ongoing forever presence for every brand. You need to really understand what you're trying to achieve. And that's why your goals are so important at the outset of any program. And then you need to determine how you're going to achieve that and in what time frame. Running the Facebook contest, I mean, for some people, posting to Facebook every few weeks with a relevant piece of content is going to be really valuable. Whereas for others, posting 7, 8, 9 times a day, for a news agency, for example, a news agency can't get away with sharing news once every 2 weeks. A dry cleaner, if they have a special for all their fans, can run a promotion on Facebook and get a great response in their local area by running an ad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all going to depend on what you're trying to do and where your audience might exist.
Dude, awesome. I'll tell you this. This has been a fantastic episode from my perspective, because, you know, even if everybody else listening out there gets a little bit lost in what's happening, I am learning so much just talking to you, and I absolutely love that about having conversations with you, because you just bring it from such a good perspective. But I'm noticing that you and I have been on for 45 minutes, and I'm realizing I could talk to you for another hour about all this stuff. But why don't we wrap this episode and agree to do a part two at some point, and I'll bring you back and we'll talk a little bit more about data.
That sounds great. I'd love to.
All right, cool. Well, before I let you go, why don't you tell people where they can go and be social with you online, where they can find out more about the work you're doing, where they can check out some of the resources you've put together, some of your brilliant thoughts, or maybe where they can see you speak next.
Sure. So online, I have my personal blog, which is coreypadveen.com, CoreyPadveen.com. We have our corporate blog. I write pretty much the majority of our articles on our corporate blog. We do accept guest posts, so if anybody would like to guest post on our blog, feel free to submit. That's marketinginternational.com. And as far as connecting with me, if you type Corey Padgett into Google, there will be a few dozen networks where you can connect, or you can just go to About Me and look me up, and all of my networks are connected there. So about.me/Corey Padveen, that's me. And as far as where we can actually meet in person, Jeff, you and I will be in Dallas together at the end of August.
That's correct.
And we'll be in San Francisco towards the end of September.
That's true.
And Boston in, what is it, October, I think?
Yep, end of October we'll be in Boston.
And then I'll also be in Dubai in the middle of September, Las Vegas at the end of September, beginning of October. And I think that might be it.
All right, cool,
and then I get some time off.
Time off. That's preposterous. Corey, always a pleasure having you on, man. You are such an awesome dude, and I hope you come back for part two.
Definitely. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Cool, man. Take care, everybody out there. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.